You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
It is Thursday, June 20th, 2019, and this is the MMA Beat. Welcome, everyone. My name is Luke Thomas. You know me from SiriusXM, as well as MMAfighting.com. I am joined here with the three of us today. To my left, wearing the least subtle clothing imaginable, but you know what? He's rocking out. My man, Danny Segura, is here from MMAfighting.com. And at the end of the table, everybody's favorite, Phoenix Carnevale. You know her from UFC Unfiltered, In Fighting Shape podcast, Access TV, the whole shebang. Ladies, how are we doing?
Great.
You like that? Well, hey, what happened to the mustache?
Shaved it. Comes and goes.
You sicken me. Why'd you shave it?
You know, I don't know. All good things
just
come to an
like
end.
It?
Yeah.
All right.
Just felt like it. I like to change looks, you know.
Okay. You got to keep the people on their toes.
So, exactly.
Appreciate you guys tuning in today. As always, we will get to your questions after the show on a segment we call After the Beat. Keep sending them using the hashtag BMMABeat. All right. Let's get into it. You know what's surprising is you may not feel it, but then when you start to go down the list, you're like, whoa, this is actually a crazy busy weekend in combat sports. Let's see, right? You got Bellator London, UFC Greenville, BKFC 6, and I'm sure there's a million of smaller shows I'm missing as well. We are going to get to those. Let's actually start with something that just happened on Tuesday. Danny, I'll start with you. The return of Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series, and boy, have I seen a lot of hand-wringing about this.
Yeah.
So there was, as usual, I think, what, four or five fights the last 2 hours. Two contracts were given out, one to Puna Soriano and one to this gentleman, DeCastro, forget his last name. Please forgive me. The one DeCastro, I don't see that as particularly controversial. Soriano wouldn't be controversial, probably, but for the fact that Brendan, I don't know how you pronounce his name, Lockton, did not get a deal. Clearly the best fighter on that card.
Yep.
He won, got a broken nose in the second round, fought through it, and did not get a deal because he shot for a takedown, according to Dana White, in the last 10 seconds. Good call, bad call?
Yeah, this has been quite a hot topic. I honestly don't, I think that takedown was so irrelevant because his body of work was already done within, you know, the last, you know, 14 minutes he was in that cage. So the last 10 seconds, it wasn't like he needed a finish and then he shot for a takedown and he just managed to get a decision. He had already put in the work. He had already defeated his opponent. At that point, you know, as you mentioned, he had a broken nose. I'm sure he doesn't want to take an extra punch here and there on the nose. So he just shot for a takedown and I didn't really see it as being a big deal, but apparently it was for Dana White. I think it was a bad call. Ultimately, you want people that are skilled, people that are talented in your organization, and that's who Brendan is. He's a skilled fighter, and he should have gotten an opportunity, but we also know sort of the brand of the Dana White Tuesday Night Contender Series, where Dana White likes, you know, sort of the just bleed vibe where guys are just going all at it. And we've seen even fighters coming off the feet get second chances and whatnot just out of their performances. So personally, I think it was a bad call, but we also know what kind of fighter Dana is looking for. And I don't think Brendan was it.
Well, I ask you this. What weight class is Brendan in?
That was...
Was it featherweight, I think?
Featherweight,
featherweight like or bantam. Something like that. It was feather or bantam, right? So,
yeah.
So like I said, and I've said this a lot, it's really about casting what's needed in a particular division or department. So DeCastro was heavyweight, that trying to mix things up, kind of pick him up. He's got some buzz because it was a KO by leg kick. Soriano, I've seen in the LFA, super tough and has fought some people that...
Say he's a better fighter than Brendan, though.
I definitely wouldn't say that either. But the point I'm making is, like, if he's looking for the excitement factor that particular night, that's the decision he made. And the only reason it doesn't upset me is because I work for the LFA and I watch the way that the UFC takes our fighters, and they took like 30% of our roster last year, and I watch how they kind of funnel in through the system. The Contender Series isn't always the great and the best way to go. And because Dana said at the end of it, this kid's going to make it here, just not tonight, it really didn't bother me that much because I watched them grow and bloom in the LFA and then get picked up because they need someone in that division on another card. So I feel like those possibilities are kind of endless and that we shouldn't always focus on the Contender Series being the way to get in.
Okay, so two questions for you. From what you can tell, I don't know how much you've thought about it or not, is there a rhyme or reason? Is there like a... If someone had to ask you, what kind of fighters does Dana take from the LFA, what would you say?
I would
champions.
Champions, yeah.
Like if you get a belt, you're almost sitting there waiting for that UFC call.
Okay. Yeah, what
definitely.
Else?
Also, people who are on a good tear and who have fought, competition. And then sometimes it's about, well, you're in their top five, and we're looking for somebody in your weight class, and that's happening soon. And can you make it?
Hmm.
So it's a lot of crazy ways that these kids and guys and girls get into the UFC.
Okay, so that's a fair point too, right? Because short notice is a great thing.
Yeah.
Here's the thing that I think was really off-putting for me was Brendan didn't just win the fight. He actually had his best round in the third after he'd had his nose broken. If you guys didn't see his Instagram, he was urinating blood later, which is always a fun little detail. And he kind of got made an example of. I think that part to me is like, he's like, this is what you don't do. It's like, fight IQ?
Yeah.
That's what you don't do? That was a weird message. I get why he does it because I have a theory too. But I have to say, I found that extremely, for Dana White to go out there after a guy broke his nose in the second round and then put it on his opponent in the third, that was incredibly insulting.
Yeah.
I can understand that. I can definitely see your point of view there, and especially within the wording of that. It's like, if you have a high fight IQ and you just got to be really willing to risk the loss and go out there and be a killer, and that's not how necessarily every single fighter fights. And I think, scoring that takedown for him at the end was, hey, I'm going to score. And to Dana, it was that you don't have that killer instinct. And on the Contender Series, we're looking for killer instinct guys only. And that...
We keep calling it killer instinct. Let's just call it what it is. It's low fight IQ. Sorry, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Like, we're dressing it up in these nice terms.
Sure.
Here's my theory. I wonder what you guys make of it. My theory is that...
Because killer instinct is different. Killer instinct is if you got the guy hurt and you think and you see the window and the opportunity to get the finish.
And go for
that wasn't there for Brendan. His opponent was tough.
That dude, Bill Algeo, was super tough.
He was, he was in that third round, he took so many shots. It was ridiculous. So it wasn't like, oh, he didn't have killer instinct. There was no window for him to go for the kill. That's why he went for the takedown.
Also, we're gonna talk about Korean Zombie in a minute, who got knocked out at 4:59 of the third.
Yeah.
Like, that happens. That's a real thing in this sport.
Yeah, exactly.
I can totally understand. So to me, it was really weird. But I will say, I was thinking, at first I was like, how could it be that, like, to your point, Dana even said this guy's gonna fight in the UFC.
Right.
He acknowledged he was UFC caliber. He just didn't put him on the show. And so I thought to myself, how does that make sense? Here's how it makes sense to me. One is, hey, we need heavyweights. This guy looked good. DeCastro looked good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sign him. No problem. Okay. But other than that, they're looking for two kinds of fighters, I think. One is the one who is willing to fight against their own interests sometimes, all out, empty the gas tank. You have to win usually, but just this kind of effort that may or may not be necessarily in their best interest in terms of the win of the fight, but they luck out. They take a risk. They like risk takers.
Mm-hmm.
And they like world beaters. In either perspective, if you take all the risks and you knock your opponent out in the second, that's one way to get in.
Sure.
The other way to get in is the other end of the bell curve. When you're so damn good, you're not taking all these risks. You're just blowing through everybody.
Yeah.
They'll take both. But that doesn't mean that the ones in between are not UFC caliber. It just means you're not a right fit for the show.
Yes, it's reality TV still at the end of the day. I mean, they're a media company also. You guys remember Kevin Holland, right? He was on the Contender Series. Mm-hmm. He knew that he wasn't going to get the contract that night. He just knew because he looked. And I think Greg Hardy and Alonzo Menafield were also
Two very good fighters.
Yeah, that same night.
Well, one popular, one good fighter.
Right. So he looked at it and he was like, all right, I'm not getting it tonight. But what I am going to do is I'm going to showcase my skills, showcase who I am, get in front of the big boss and sit around and wait. He came back, I think, to the LFA or a couple other local promotions, fought once or twice. He's in.
Yeah.
Isn't he fighting this weekend? He's fighting...
He might be. I don't know.
I think he's on the Greenville card. But anyway, that's my point. Like, I look at the Contender Series as reality TV. And sometimes we kind of want to steer the fighters away from doing the Ultimate Fighter or doing the Contender Series.
That's
like,
exactly correct.
No, man, work here. Like, get your record up. Make it a little bit more interesting. Win a belt here. Then have them call you and give you a contract rather than going in through that whole reality TV thing.
Dude, it is so funny to me, Danny, to piggyback on her point. Yeah. Last week, what were we talking about? Aaron Pico not getting enough time on the regional scene. And she is absolutely right. It is, at the end of the day, it's reality TV. And again, they're going to get the world beaters. They're going to get the risk takers. But there are so many good fighters who could find their way to the UFC, but they got to find the right fit. Mm-hmm. To me, this was a wake-up call. You and your manager, find the right fit. True or false?
100%. I mean, if you look at The Ultimate Fighter, also, like, the people that, the Ultimate Fighter is a very interesting...
It's a tournament.
It's a tournament. Yeah. That's what it is. And some fighters are better suited for that. Some fighters, 100%. In fact, can make the weight repeatedly because they're not that heavy. Whereas you get, for example, Sajara Eubanks, for example, struggled. And it wasn't that because she wasn't a good fighter. It was because to make 125, it was really tough on her body. And to do it multiple times in such a short amount of time, it just wasn't possible for her to keep up a certain performance and also just make the weight. So fighters need to have a self-assessment, see what they're good at, what their skills at, what their attribute is, what their brand is, to be honest.
Sure.
And then find the right fit. Whether it's, you know, picking up a belt somewhere else, whether it's the Contender Series. I'm just happy that there's more avenues than The Ultimate Fighter because that's all we had for
now.
Sure,
of course.
So I know the Contender Series is getting a lot of criticism because of that. But look, if you look at the guys that have come out of it, like Sean O'Malley, you know, he is a star. He's fighting Chito Vera at UFC 239, I believe, in July.
Johnny Walker is another one.
Ian Heinisch.
Exactly. So it does serve a certain purpose. Just for Brandon, that just wasn't the right avenue. And I also want to add this.
Sure.
As media, we sort of look at the UFC and we've been very critical of it. And I feel like the media often takes a very sports outlook to this, you know, whole company and just, you know, the whole organization in general. But it's sports entertainment, you know. So from a merit standpoint, yes, Brandon deserved to get a contract, but this is just not the same sphere that the UFC is looking.
I think the lesson I take is one. I think the right fit is one. And by the way, Bellator might be a better fit for you.
Sure.
You know, there's a lot of ways this could go. For
also,
you.
Brandon got a bunch of publicity right now.
Like having people on his side is so good for him when he does make it in.
There's no doubt about it. He also got raked over the coals. I mean, this whole thing where like he came out looking great. He did. He also got treated like shit. Like we just you got to acknowledge it. Okay. The last thing I'll say about this is. Goes back to what Phoenix does. She goes and covers these LFA shows. There are so many tiers below LFA, which folks don't even realize. This is a lesson and a wake-up call for fighters about getting the right kind of experience and for fans, too. You want to see somebody think long-term? Find me the guy who's taken 6, 7, 8, 9 fights on the regional show and then jumps. We all want these ultimate fighters. I've had 3 fights. I'm ready. I want to be in the Contender Series. I got 5 first-round knockouts. Dude, you're not ready for the UFC. You are so not ready. And if you don't donk it up and take risks, they're going to make an example out of you.
And there's so many ways that you need to get prepared, not just the physical aspect of fighting. What we
5-round fights,
for sure. That's a big deal as well. And what we do with the LFA is we also media train them. We try to teach them to be media savvy. Yeah. Before an interview, I'll sit there and I'll talk to them. It's like, these are the questions that I'm going to ask you. What are you going to say? Okay, let's try. Let's practice a little bit. It doesn't always work out, but we at least give them the opportunity to say,
that's crazy.
You're going to be on social media. You're going to be tagged on this and that. You're going to be filmed. You're going to be on television. This is what the walkout's going to be like. That's a lot to take into consideration if it's something you've never done before.
No doubt about it. All right, we got to move on from it. The other thing I want to talk about here very quickly is Dana White's made a bunch of claims. Now, a lot of them are very vague, so it's hard to know exactly what he means and how he means it. But the talk about boxing has really ramped up. Mm-hmm. Brian Campbell, who's not on today's show, had talked about that the PBC, by the way, he was the one who talked about the rumor before it became a big thing, that the PBC was was going to be purchased by Endeavor, the parent company of UFC. Maybe Dana White might have a hand. That rumor got spread afterward. And then there was this Apex facility debut for the Contender Series. The Apex facility looks amazing, by the way.
Sick.
That's one of those times where I was like, that truly is a pretty interesting idea by Zuffa. I will give them credit for it. They're talking about doing boxing. And here's what I was thinking about. Now, I don't know if DAZN's going to be a success or not. I don't know if they can get the right kind of fights or not. But you're watching Canelo on DAZN. Mm-hmm. You're watching Triple G on DAZN. You're watching Anthony Joshua on DAZN. You just saw Tyson Fury, not on ESPN pay-per-view, not on ESPN. You saw him on ESPN Plus. He was talking about a huge rebrand with Fight Pass. Why is it crazy, Phoenix, if it is crazy, to think that Dana White couldn't sign a potentially important boxing fight? Mikey Garcia on my very radio show said he was interested in talking to him.
Yeah.
And put it on Fight Pass. Why is that so crazy? I don't think that's crazy at all.
I don't think it's crazy at all either, especially we've all been involved with MMA for a long time. We were involved before it was legal in certain states. We were involved before it was legal here. We were involved when practically no media was at these events. And then looking at it on ESPN now, having ESPN Plus, Fight Pass definitely needs a revamp. Why not revamp it with getting the opportunity for boxing fans to be like, all right, I'll check this out. Because right now it's just a library, really. So I don't really feel surprised by anything that the UFC does now, because once it sold for $4.2 billion and then it got on ESPN, now I'm just kind of sitting back and watching what else they do. I'm really not surprised. I'm really kind of shocked at just the fact that we continue to keep moving forward in such big ways. I know forward motion I'm not surprised by, but like, okay, all right. Boxing, sure. Why not? It's combat sports. We're tackling combat sports. I'm just curious as to how we rebranded, because it's been the Mixed Martial Arts organization for so long.
That's right.
What does it look like? What does it sound like? What's it called?
That's right.
Yeah.
Danny?
It's interesting. Yeah, UFC Fight Pass.
Are you skeptical or no of the possibilities there?
No, I am. I am.
Because, you are skeptical.
Yeah, because UFC Fight Pass started hot. We were talking about how, you know, it was such a great platform. Yeah. Now we have a place where we can watch all these fights. And I remember Anderson Silva and Bisping fought on UFC Fight Pass. Like, there were some big fights going on as well. And then all of a sudden, we started seeing sort of the bigger fights happen elsewhere, not UFC Fight Pass. And then ESPN Plus, you know, picked up the Contender Series. Do you have The Ultimate Fighter as well?
I think, I don't know. I forget. The part of that deal was hard to remember, but I don't know.
But they've acquired a lot of things that made Fight Pass so appealing, you know? So at this point, you know, you could ask, like, you know, why, you know, what's the purpose of Fight Pass, right? Like, what's the purpose of having it? But if...
To undercut DAZN.
Yeah,
if you manage to get, you know, some boxers assigned to a deal, all of a sudden, you know, you have something a little more complete. I think it's a long shot, it's a long way to go. Because also, if you look at DAZN, they have other properties like Bellator, Combate Americas, that ends up adding up to something larger. And I feel like UFC Fight Pass, although they have EBI and a few other martial arts acquisitions, they don't have the same presence as, say, like a ESPN Plus. Mm-hmm. So I think it's definitely possible they have the platform to do it, especially like giving they have the UFC PI, the UFC Apex now, and they can just, that's also an enticing thing for any boxer that would like to sign, right? Like, come over here, we'll take care of you, we'll get you the proper training with the best of the best. But I think it's got a long way to go for it to be.
I'm optimistic and pessimistic at the same time. So here's where I'm optimistic. I don't think that there is any promoter in the space doing anything with the same kind of long-term vision as the UFC is with mm-hmm. this Apex facility.
Right. Yep.
It sounds like a lot of pie in the sky, and I'm sure some of the things they say will not come true. I bet some of it does. I bet a lot of it does. That is future-proof investment that nobody is doing. Not even a little bit. So that to me is interesting. Second of all, I've talked to people in the boxing world, like, what do you think about Dana White getting involved? And it was surprisingly, they were welcome to it. Mm-hmm. I thought they'd be like, this jabroni, get him out. No, not at all. Now, of course, there's some skepticism as well.
Right.
So I think that they're another entrant coming in and shaking things up. They like that. Here's where I have a little issue with it. Or not issue, I just don't understand. He's talking about working with other promoters and not doing his own belts and working with the sanctioning bodies. It's like, wait a second. You're doing all the things that you don't do in MMA to make money, and now you're going to do that in boxing? Because if you do that, like, you want Anthony Joshua to fight on Fight Pass, it's going to cost you $40 million. I got a lot of UFC fighters are going to be wondering, why don't they have $40 million? Yep. So how do you juggle two different realities while being the same promoter of both?
That was the one thing I was really confused on, how they were going to work that out. Because, you know, I've had a lot of talks with Heather Hardy. And she always talks about the inequality in boxing's pay. And that was one of the main reasons that she had switched over to MMA. So I was a bit hopeful that if the UFC does restructure the way boxing is done, because boxing never really respected the women in fight culture. They really haven't. I mean, my female boxing friends will tell you that. There's a few that are at the very top, but their very top is still less than any male boxer ever. And it's a very sad pay scale, where with MMA, it feels like if a woman's a star, she's a star, and that's it. She's making money because she's where she is on the card and who she is in her brand. Boxing never really had that. Like, Heather will talk about selling tickets after tickets and still making
$40,000 worth,
and still making practically nothing, mm-hmm. or not even being on like the TV portion or things like that. She can tell you in much better detail. So I'm wondering if the structure of how that works for women in MMA will fall over into women in boxing, and how much better for the branding, for their pay. I mean, we complain about fighter pay in the UFC so much, but could it possibly be as bad as what women in boxing go through? So that kind of sparked some interest in my head on how the way the UFC brands and makes their stars, how much that might actually help. Because the truth is, I don't really know much about some of the fighters that are on the undercards in boxing. I really only know the main event, and that's really most of the time what I tune in for. But with the UFC, even though we criticize them, we'll know some of the people that are on the undercards, that are on Fight Pass, that we'll know those names. Yeah. And I give them a lot of credit for that. And I wonder if that structure will really help some of these boxers, and why that maybe that's why they're so open to it.
But I also think that's why they make the money that they make. Like, you, right. All the money is concentrated at the top in boxing, and then very little all the way down.
Sure.
And you don't know them. You know some of the ones on the prelim card because they all get kind of this middle class salary. Right. And there's a lot of benefits to either version. But I think most fighters would be like, I'd rather have the situation where I can get, for the most part, the 40 million. Danny?
Yeah, I agree. And it's going to be an interesting thing to see if it does come through, like how Dana White and the UFC is going to handle it. Because that can cause a lot of, stir a lot of things up with over at the UFC, because they can, you know, the fighters can say, well, you know, how are they making so much money, right? And it's going to be interesting as well how Dana White and how the UFC changes their model of promotion to boxing. Because if you look at boxing, we're not tuning in because the WBA title's on the line. We're tuning in because Manny Pacquiao's fighting Keith Thurman.
That's right. Yeah.
It revolves around personality. It revolves around individuals. That's rather right. than the actual body, right? Whereas the UFC, and you know, I know the product looks different than it did a few years ago. Nonetheless, you see a UFC card, you kind of know what kind of quality of MMA to expect, right? What kind of quality of fighting. So you tune in. Yes, there's names, and there's names on the card, but you mainly, a lot of people tune in because there's UFC fights, right? Yeah. MMA fights. So that's gonna get very interesting to see how they manage it. I don't have an answer to it, but you know, I'm just curious to see how it works out.
Here's a sad reality about it, though. Every time the UFC takes something from the fighters, you know what they do? They roll over. So, like, if they start promoting boxers who are getting $20 million checks, you know what they probably will do if past is prologue? Nothing. They will do nothing. So just keep that in mind. Fun little part. All right. With that out of the way, let's talk about some of the fights coming up this week. There's actually a bunch of them. Okay. Let's start with Bellator just a little bit so we can recap next week, and then we'll talk about a UFC card that I've never seen this little amount of buzz for. But Bellator London is this weekend. Bellator London. A couple of interesting fights on this. I'm going to make a proclamation to you both. Ready for this one?
Go for it.
Notice I didn't say prediction. I didn't say prediction.
Oh,
proclamation.
Wow.
Proclamation. Okay. This gives me enough wiggle room where if it blows up in my face, I can be like, well, I didn't.
It was just a proclamation.
Just a proclamation.
Not a prediction.
I'm getting a bit of a spidey sense about Rafael Lovato Jr. If you don't know anything about him, he's one of the, one of the best American black belts ever in jiu-jitsu, facing Gegard Mousasi for the middleweight title. He is amazing. He is an amazing fighter. If it goes to the ground, as good as Mousasi is, he ain't Lovato good. Not hardly anyone in the world is. He's in shape. And here's the thing about Lovato, and it's this whole Bellator card too. It's coming off this Bellator NYC hangover. Like, Lovato's a real quiet sportsman, bows assiduously. Phoenix avoids talking nonsense. Mousasi, I'm not saying he's checked out, but he's definitely in the later stages of his career. Yep. I wonder what you make of this matchup and my spidey sense about Lovato's potential here. Real potential for an upset, if you ask me.
One, I love that you use spidey sense.
Yes. Got that tingle.
Two, we've seen Lovato Jr. in the LFA. Four-fight winning streak. Was our champ. Then, of course, got picked up by Bellator. He's nasty. He can strike. He can wrestle.
Yes.
His jiu-jitsu. I've seen him coach. He's a fantastic coach. He's so clear and concise. If he does win, I would not be surprised. Look, Mousasi's Mousasi. He's great. He's fought in like every single organization ever, right? He's like fought for everybody. But he has 53 fights. So you know, I think Lovato has 9. So he's like this young lion coming in with a lot of diversity. And also you worry about Mousasi because he's coming off of like severe sciatica and back issues. And that's why he had to take some time off. So if he's fresh and he's focused, it makes a very interesting matchup. But I would not be surprised. I really wouldn't be surprised if Lovato takes it.
What are you feeling about this matchup?
It's kind of, I feel pretty confident Gegard I'm not making a prediction. I'm making a proclamation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That Another Gegard, one. Yeah, a different one.
That Gegard, you know, will defend his title. But look, it wouldn't surprise me. Lovato, as you guys both said, he's super skilled, super legit. And it's not like Gegard hasn't been submitted before. I believe he got submitted by Jacare, right?
Yeah, although he had a knee injury at the time. Yeah. And so there's a little bit of controversy about it.
But, you know, it's been done before. So, you know, I can definitely see it happening. But, you know, I have a feeling that experience will take Musasi pretty far in this one. And it's kind of like a similar storyline into the main event that we just saw at Bellator NYC with an undefeated Jiu-Jitsu phenom and Neiman Gracie taking on Rory McDonald, who had questions entering that bout. And now here we are, you know, questioning Gegard Mousasi because he has said things. He has put a timeline onto his career. He knows he's in the end. He knows he only has a few fights left. It's an extremely interesting main event. I think the fact that it's even, because it's been booked before and it's been canceled, the fact that it's been prolonged, I feel like it's even more interesting now. And the fact that we already know that Machida won. Yeah, it's an interesting fight, but I'm feeling Gegard in this one.
Well, the only thing I would add to that is, as good as Neiman Gracie has been in jiu-jitsu, Lovato has been much better.
That's right.
And as to Phoenix's point, can wrestle and strike in a way that Neiman's takedowns are a lot of trip and then upper body takedowns. He can straight up double leg, like very well. Don't tell Dana White.
Mousasi is really smart, though. I mean, when I was listening to him talk about the strategy for this fight, he's like, I'm not going to be able to bully this guy. I'm not going to really be able to ground and pound this guy. I have to stay long. So I feel like he's going to try to fight him at range and pop shots at him and just hurt him and pick him apart until he gets him tired. That's probably where we're going to go if he's able to do that.
Yeah, and I think what can be said about this win for Mousasi in his career at this stage? To your point, he's fought everywhere.
Yeah.
He's fought the very best fighters of his generation. Almost fight in and fight out for the most part. Does this win do a lot for his resume? What does it mean for him if he ends up beating, let's say, convincingly destroys Lovato?
He continuously brings up, I'm getting paid, I'm getting paid. So I think that's what it is. It's like, just keep banking it off.
I guess what I'm asking
sunset.
Is he like, where would he be under like most underrated?
Oh, he's definitely up there. I feel like it's one of those things like a Pernell Whitaker where people don't only appreciate him after they watch old footage of him after he's gone. And that's a shame to me, you know. But yeah, I think that because he switched over to Bellator and because we still aren't talking about Bellator fighters the way that we should, especially after this weekend, I'm a little high on Bellator right now. I think that took a little bit of the value off of where he sits in that division, unfortunately. But I think that if we're looking at combat sports as a whole, if we look at his Wikipedia page and everybody else in that division's Wikipedia page, he's probably going to be up there. Yeah,
I think because of his long layoff. Because if you guys remember when Bellator acquired Gegard Mousasi, it was around the same time that they also got Rory McDonald. Mm-hmm. And the talk at that time was, Bellator could make an argument that they have the best welterweight and the best middleweight the planet.
That's right.
I feel like that has dwindled down because of inactivity. But look, we know how legit Lovato Jr. is. So if Gegard Mousasi does blow the doors off him and gets a huge win, I think that conversation can start, you know, it'll reignite again. And then all of a sudden you have somebody in Machida that you can pin him up against that can bring sort of the attention to a level where we can start having that conversation again. And Gegard can be viewed as one of the best middleweights in the world.
People look at it in a weird way, though, because they don't look at it as like, these are Bellator guys. They look at it as, these are old UFC guys.
Yes.
These at the end of their prime.
Except it's a little different. Except Lovato, maybe. But
right.
Yeah.
So I think that's what hurts Masasi's legacy, just a drop.
I would.
He didn't get the UFC belt, and he got the Bellator belt. There's always going to be people who go, what about that, bro?
But he was on a win streak, and I think there were circumstances there that outside of his fighting.
He was the number one contender when he split.
When he left, yeah. And also, He's not like the earlier acquisitions that Bellator had, like the Tito Ortiz, Rampage Jackson, that, you know, they were really big names, but clearly
they were
already
on the
end of their career. You can say that you got Mousasi, you know, maybe not peak prime, but within the best years of his career.
Agreed.
He left as a top contender. He left on a nice win streak as well. I believe his last fight was against Weidman?
Yeah, it was controversial, because it was Mergliotta said it was a down knee, but it wasn't.
He was pulling him up from the sort of like a...
Nonetheless, he was looking good in that bout. I think I'll push back into a point a little bit in the sense of like, I feel like Bellator got him in the good years.
Mm-hmm. I would just say, though, here this is what I want to prepare people for. look, maybe Musasi go. Musasi is an amazing fighter.
For sure.
So maybe he goes in there. All the way around. And maybe he just goes in there and jabs him and busts up his face and then, you know, destroys Lovato Jr. Like, would that surprise me? Not even a little bit. What I don't want to hear is if Lovato Jr. wins, people go, Gegard was overrated. No. The guy he's fighting this weekend in Lovato Jr. is the real deal Holyfield. And to me, what Musasi's already done is pretty incredible. If he can add Lovato to the mix, even better. If not, there's still, to me, a pretty impeccable body of work. Yeah. Now, co-main event. Don't have a whole lot to say about it. Eric Silva taking on Paul Daly.
I love it.
Seems just like an action fight. I think Paul's kind of passed at this point as a guy who's going to be like a title contender. I mean, Bellator, you never really know, but I think they're like, okay, he's a risk taker. He's a risk taker. They risk take on the feet. Nothing wrong with that.
Nope. That's going to be a fun fight. I know some people were complaining about this being the co-main event, but I love it. I think it could actually be one of the best fights in 2019. We'll see how it shapes out. But Eric Silva, he's not afraid to get into a fist fight, and neither is Paul Daly. So
yeah, and he can pull out a sick submission even when he's in trouble. Because when he got cut from the UFC, he had one fight with us in the LFA and then jumped over to Bellator right away. And that LFA fight, he was actually getting hurt on his feet and he's getting to the ground. And then Brian Ortega was actually cornering him, and Brian starts screaming things out. And I think he hooked up a triangle to end that first round submission, but he was getting lit up and he was able to like pull out a submission. So I think mentally he was a little like so off put about being dropped from the UFC, but he also had mentioned that he felt like he had to really take a good look at himself and rework the way he trained. So it's kind of nice to see him back.
Last thing on this is you got James Gallagher. You know what's funny about James? I met him in person for the first Bellator NYC card. No one will believe you if you tell them this, but it really is true. He's an unbelievably nice kid. Like, he was so respectful and friendly and, you know, he's the kind of guy who comes across the room to say hi and shake your hand.
That's cool.
That's who he is. Not to his opponents, but to everybody else. That's why people bag on him. I get it, because he pokes the bear, and you poke the bear, this is what happens. Like, you get Ricky Bandejas, kicks you in the face, and everyone celebrates. Here he is. This is what I was thinking about, you know. Is there really room for two Irish bad boys in MMA, especially if they're in the same team? My answer to that is, Danny, here's what my thought is. One, if Connor's kind of fading in the background, the answer is you can kind of step it up in his absence. Or maybe the simpler answer is, yeah, if he keeps winning, you can have 50 Irish bad boys if they can all win. What do you think?
We're talking about him now, so there's clearly room for
you see him getting his opponent's face? And then, his opponent's coach's face up the face-off? Yeah.
And people again, this is the talk. People are hate on James, but like even fighters are calling him out when he's coming off a loss. So
they all want a piece of him.
Yeah, it's clear that he has a name within this sport, and I think there is enough room, especially with McGregor. I mean, what is McGregor doing these days? He hasn't fought in a bit in MMA, and I don't think he's going to stick around for all that many fights while James is super young. So as soon as McGregor retires, just focuses on his whiskey business, it's all James Gallagher.
All right. Is there anything else in that card I'm not thinking of? I don't think so. That's the... Oh, here's the last piece.
Charlie Ward is fighting.
Charlie, great.
Another Irish bad boy.
Sweet. here is what caught my attention. And this is hilarious. The card, it's Bellator London. Mm-hmm. The card is going to air tape delay on DAZN. Now, I could have sworn that the
whole
purpose...
Wait, but DAZN is streaming...
I could have sworn the whole purpose of moving to the streaming profile was that we didn't have to play this dumb Viacom game of we're going to air sports on tape delay because it's better for ratings for us when we do that, which, by the way, it is. But the whole point is it's a disservice to the fans. And I get it. It's airing on Paramount. Yeah. So I guess they don't want to spoil the party for Paramount.
Right.
But I'm sorry, DAZN. If I'm paying for your service, air it live. How hard is that? Air it live. Air it live. It's live sports. Can you air it live? You have streaming technology. That's what the whole thing's about. You're going to tape delay your stream. I might have to boycott this. I might have to boycott it. That's my thought.
You're not going to.
Yeah. All right. Then that takes us very quickly to, God, was Bellator on Saturday? Did we already just pass it? It was on Friday, so we're a little bit past it. I don't want to spend much time because we've got to get to this UFC card. Phoenix, I'll jump over to you. Did you go to the fights? I saw on your Instagram you did.
I did go. Yeah. This was actually the first Bellator event I've ever attended.
Super quick. How was it?
Really, really good. Yeah. Like, the production value was really good. Whoever does their graphics department is, like, really good. Each fighter was individual.
I tell folks, if you go to a Bellator show, I don't know about the ones in Thackerville, but if they're going to do it up, it's a good show. Okay, so very quickly, and I want to get to the whole thing. There's a lot of different angles. Everyone's already talked it to death. But we kind of talked about, you work at LFA, right? Mm-hmm. And on Access. And we talked about Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. Let's talk very quickly about Aaron Pico. I've already shared all my opinions about him. Curious from your perspective, you watch people come through the ranks, and some go on and have great successes, and some do not, and it's a hard thing to figure out. He's 4-3. So here's my question to you. What went wrong?
He's just young. He's 22 years old, and he's just getting started.
Let me ask it differently.
Yeah.
Give me the good argument for why he's 4-3. In other words, to me, the fact that he's 4-3, somebody messed up. Somebody messed up. So that's my issue. I get that he's young. I'm not burying him at all.
Good.
But somebody messed up. And so what went wrong in that sense?
Well, because I watch fighters grow, I would have said, you're going to wait until you're like 24, 25 before you go into the Bellator or the UFC. I would have had him brew a little bit at the LFA or CFFC or any of those organizations, just because you have to get more ring generalship. You have to get more ring time. If you look at boxing, we're talking about boxing, some of the things that boxing does well is that they have a lot more amateur fights. They have the metros, the golden gloves. They have a lot of areas where they can compete and just get used to different body types, different strategies, different ways. This is a lot of pressure first coming in. So I wish that he would have had some time to brew. It's just that we look at people like a John Jones, for example, that gets plucked up and then winds up becoming the greatest because he's a hot prospect and all those type of things. But John Jones, look at his body type. It is a much, much less variables.
Anomaly, yeah.
Yeah, he's an anomaly. He's kind of special. So I feel you got to let people brew a little bit and give them a bigger amateur career. I think because of his pedigree, he got just jumped to the top and it's unfair to him.
Yeah. I agree with what Phoenix is saying. But my only thing that I would like to add on to that is that I feel like he can brew a little bit in Bellator. I mean, we've seen guys like Ed Ruth, we've seen guys like Dylan Danis, we've seen tons of prospects. I mean, James Gallagher, they're just this weekend, he's fighting somebody that's 12-6, close to the same amount of fights that he's had. And, you know, I mean, not the greatest record, but a record that, you know, it's a good challenge for him. Pico was getting guys that were just way out of his experience level. And I think, yeah, of course, fighting at LFA and other promotions, other smaller promotions would have been a good service for him, but I feel like he can still get that service within Bellator. Mm. It just comes down to the type of fights they're going to offer him, and it comes down to his new team, I guess, now, being like, hey, no, I don't think that's a good fight for you. I don't think you should be fighting that person. And then also the Bellator matchmakers, you know, finding good opposition for him to test his skills.
Yeah, Coker was quite verbal about saying that he wasn't just going to let him go. It's not like a three strikes, you're out type of situation, that he would have the opportunity to brew and grow there, which is good.
Yeah.
It's just that
you
I feel
get that, yep.
Yeah, and I think that's right. And at 22 years old, I don't worry so much about him. I just worry about him taking so much damage at 22 years old that it affects his future.
Right. So here's my one last Bellator question, because I know, Jesus, 40 minutes. Well, we got to Contender Series. Bellator 222 was the one on Friday. Was it a good night for Bellator, or was it a bad night for Bellator?
I think very good.
Okay, why?
I think that there was some competitive matchups. I think seeing Rory be Rory was really good. I think
Horiguchi beat Caldwell and Pico got crushed.
Yeah, but those we're talking about those two. I think
Hardy got crushed too.
Yeah, I think that bothered me a lot. I think having Chael retire brought a lot of eyes and ears and attention to them. I think Machida winning the way that he did, it's like, oh, Machida's back. You know, in a lot of ways, I think people got excited about that. And I think Archuleta was somebody for people to take notice of.
That's true.
I think Mix was somebody for people to take notice of.
That's right.
So maybe the people that we expected to win and that we were rooting for didn't, but these other people got people's attention. You know, Valerie Lareda, she's interesting too. Mm-hmm. I think it built some interest in some up-and-coming stars.
Yeah. Not a bad night.
I think it was a good night. I mean, overall, if you look at the product, you were satisfied with what you got. Yeah. It was a good night of fights.
Yep.
So automatically, it's a good night for Bellator. Now, that there were some things like the Aaron Pico loss, having Caldwell lose as well. But look, you got Kyoji Horiguchi, who's arguably one of the best bantamweights, if not the best bantamweight on planet Earth right now, that he's going to come back to your organization because there's something in his contract that he has to defend that belt. And that makes it very interesting. Also, that partnership, I feel like, was brought up a lot within this card, and I feel like fans are attracted to that cross-promotion.
Okay.
And I also think that, for example, look at, like, Dylan Dennis. He picked up a victory. He's still undefeated.
Yeah.
I just think talent prospecting, I've mentioned it a million times, talent prospecting in MMA is so hard. So, like, some of the ones you thought were going to win, they didn't. But some of the ones you didn't expect to win, here they come. So it's like...
Rory won, and he seems to be at a very good place right now. And there were so many questions entering Bellator 222 about him that, is he done? He's clearly not done.
Yeah.
So I think overall it was good news for Bellator. Also, the Machida win was also good for them because now you got a contender in two divisions.
So very good. So let's transition now, if we can, to the UFC card. I say this like every time there's an ESPN Plus card, but I swear to God... Is there any buzz for this card? If I hadn't even brought it up, would you guys have remembered there was a UFC card this week?
Yeah.
No, I go to the page a lot.
Okay.
That's why.
But fair to say, I mean, if I had to task someone when naming four fights, I think we'd all struggle on this one a little bit here. Wow, what a non-entity. Now, it's partly the issue that they were going to have Wonder Boy on it, and then he got knocked out by Anthony Pettis, and they wanted to take his time, which everyone, I hope, understands. Yeah. So that's just... So part of the way the cookie crumbles. On the other hand, this is the thing, getting back to Dana White talking about the boxing stuff. You know why I think he probably wants to do boxing? To, like, bring it all home? I think he's a little, I won't say bored in MMA, but they've got everything kind of on a system now.
Yeah.
It's like a factory assembly of Fords. And it turns all the product in the MMA side a little bit to banquet food. But... It's a system. So I think he's trying to, like, well, I kind of got this going on. Let me see what I can do to, you know, promote other things.
I think that's part of it, but I also think boxing is a lot more exciting right now.
Yeah.
And I think that they have so much money, and then the Apex is new, and it's like, well, how much stuff can we film in here? Well, we could do boxing. I mean, it seats only like 2,000, so, you know, it's all going to be stuff that's major for streaming. It's not going to be anything that's a ticket sales type of thing. But we're going back to their interest in boxing. But I think it has more to do with the fact that boxing got more interesting recently. Is it just me? I just feel like there's much more buzz about it.
Yeah,
and that hasn't happened in a really long time, especially for heavyweights.
I thought for sure when the Floyd and Manny era came to an end, you know, Manny's still competing, but it's on its last legs. I thought, oh, we're in trouble. Nope, not really.
No. So I think that has more to do with it. It's like, we have all this possibility. We have a good system going.
Yeah, but when you're also pumping out the UFC Greenvilles of the world, anything is more interesting.
This is where I disagree, because my brain is kind of groomed to watch these type of shows that don't have big buzzes, because I want to see my LFA people who got into the UFC perform really well and build their careers. So usually it's the cards that I don't know really a lot of the names on. I'll watch it because I'm more interested to see this up and coming talent. So I've trained my brain that way.
Yeah.
So I don't really necessarily.
Yeah, but you're a casual MMA fan. What are you looking at this card for? There's nothing for you.
No way. But where are these people that are going to eventually be the stars? When are they going to fight? So they got to be on the green belt.
So this is my point. It's like, you know, I'm being a bit hypocritical because I always tell people, go to regional MMA, go to regional MMA,
sure.
Go to regional MMA, because there's the ticket price is so worth the dollar.
You get good seats too.
You get great seats. Yeah, you want some blood splattered on you? I got great news for you.
There are the Avengers summer blockbusters of the world, and then there are the good independent films. These are like the indie films that aren't all over
and also,
the media.
You don't know who's going to be the next, you know, star.
Right.
Here's the problem. The Avengers is 3 hours. These shows are seven.
It just takes less
time.
That's true.
But I'll say this, just a little anecdote about our regional MMA. I saw Nico Price coming up in the regional circuit at Fight Time Promotions in South Florida.
I called one of...
Dude, Nico Price had...
Did he demolish people?
Bonker fights. Yeah. I don't know if this is online. Probably not, but look it up. Nico Price versus Michael Lilly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's one of the craziest fights I've ever seen. And I was right there, and there was maybe like just a few hundred people with me.
Cejudo came out of the LFA. Valentina Shevchenko came out of the LFA. Like, I mean, there's so many huge stars. Brian Ortega was an LFA champion.
Yeah, LFA has produced some serious heavy hitters.
So I really like, I'd like to see everything kind of string along.
I called when he was an amateur. I called one of Sadiq Youssef's fights. He absolutely annihilated some kid in, like, I think a minute. Maybe not even that. And I was like, God damn, that kid's good.
When was this?
Not long ago. Four years ago,
yeah,
maybe?
Yeah, because he's fairly new, too.
Yeah, but 4 years ago, he was an amateur. He was like, I think the promoter's like, you got to go pro. Like, you can't you can't do this anymore. In any event. All right, so we have UFC Greenville. Danny, main event. You got Hanato Moicano taking on Chan Sung Jung. Moicano, not as young as people think, but not old, 30. Chan Sung Jung had some time off. Had that crazy fight with Yair.
Yeah.
One of those later, and now he's 32 and coming off of a loss. What are these two fighting for?
To try to stay relevant in the featherweight division.
Yeah, and again, Moicano coming off the Aldo loss.
Yeah.
Coming off, so they're trying to get on the winning track.
They're trying to get on the winning track.
What are they fighting
for? I think Moicano, yes, you mentioned he's 30, but MMA years, he's still very young. He's nowhere 30 as far as like MMA years go. And I feel like there's a lot of promise in him. Even in that Jose Aldo fight, like you can see things where he's still putting things together. Chan Sung Jung, I wouldn't say he's likely a finished product at this point. We know what we're going to get with him when he fights. But again, he had to do military service. So there's still a lot of questions. And that Yair fight, he was looking good. Unfortunately for him, he got knocked out. But I think Chan Sung Jung has a strong following. And I feel like if he gets a win here, another win there, he could probably put a last run together to fight for the title. Whereas Moicano has a lot more life left in him. So I think this is a more important fight for Chan Sung Jung than it is for Hanato.
Phoenix, I think if you're a hardcore fan, what I'm about to say does not apply. But I think this is true for the cat. In fact, I'm damn certain it's true. There was a moment in time in MMA where maybe Chan Sung Jung could have claimed the title as the most exciting fighter, most exciting good fighter. Like, he was beating Dustin Poirier in Fairfax, Virginia, for crying out loud.
And
Dana White was wearing Korean zombie shirts. Again, for the hardcores, still relevant. For everybody else, I feel like that thing has completely died.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Not saying it's fair.
Yeah. I think because he is the Korean zombie, and there's always been, like, that name has come into play and come up in conversations for people who are very relevant. I think that it kind of has a bit of buzz. But, yeah, I believe Moicano is a lot more talked about in recent days because he's been more active besides the last fight. But I think that this particular fight brings both of them into our attention, and it makes the rankings a little bit more interesting. Like, who's going to pop up? Who's going to be in our top 10, top 5? Who's going to drop off of that? And I think that the biggest thing to take away from that particular matchup is who's moving forward.
Yeah.
I think also it's a question of, like, who has a future?
Yeah.
Right? Because Moicano at 30, he's beaten some good guys, but then he goes against the elite ones. Brian Ortega falls apart, Jose Aldo. You could maybe argue with stopped early. I don't think so. He lost that one. And now you're like, you're 30 years old, man, and Brazil needs its next, its next guy forward. Are you going to be that guy?
Yeah.
It's funny, like, I've been making this point for years. Like, Brazil had, like, I mean, the generation that came out of, like, the Machida's at the tail end of it, but, like, the Renato Sobrals and Vanderleys and Machida's and the Shogun, and then Ninja, people forget Ninja used to be a good fighter, And then the Nogueira brothers and Brazilian top team and Shoot to Box and all that. I mean,
Junior,
this generation, this wave of Brazilian talent. And you still have the same amount in terms of the number of fighters for the most part. But they're a big star. So is it going to be Borrachinha? Who's it going to be? Turns out Jessica Andrade just comes there and body slams Rose, captures that title. I don't know if she'll be a star. Amanda Nunes. Cyborg, captures two belts. I don't know if she's going to be a star, but it turns out it was on the women's side of the game that they made the most gains.
That's what I was just going to say. But I just want to know where they are in the rankings.
So right now for a featherweight?
Right.
I can tell you, if you give me just a minute here.
Should I have to be like top 15?
Yeah, where's Korean Zombie and where's Moicano?
They got to be near the top, I'm assuming.
I have a feeling Moicano is higher ranked.
For sure. I mean, he's been much more active.
Actually, KZ might not even be in the rankings, to be honest.
He's definitely going to be in the rankings. So your rankings for featherweight, Jesus Christ, this interface. Could it be worse? Moicano's sitting at 5.
Right.
And Chan Sung Jung at 12.
Okay. So there you
12.
Go. There you go.
That's pretty interesting. All right. Also on that card, a rematch of sorts. You have Rob Font, one of these guys out of New England. A lot of people don't know how good he is. He's very good as a striker. He's only lost
one of the most underrated fighters, I think.
Super underrated.
Yeah.
He's only ever lost to, like, really good fighters. So, like, Pedro Munhoz. He lost to Lineker before. I think there's somebody else he lost to. Rafael Sunsao. But he's actually pretty good. He's coming off of a win, and he's taking on John Lineker. And this is going to be at bantamweight, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
You had Lineker complaining he wasn't getting enough fights. Here he gets this one. He gets a rematch. Again, I'm asking, what are they fighting for? Like, how do you size up, not necessarily who's going to win, but, like, what's at stake here?
What's at stake is, again, if we're really using the rankings as sort of who's going to get scheduled for what's next. Like, notice I don't say title, because it's who's busy, who's occupied, and what's next in play. It's just setting you up for what's next in play. And I think that that's where they are particularly. And it's a little bit of a popularity contest, too. Because Lineker is way more of the popular, too, definitely, yeah, because of his power, his hands, his striking. And it might be the popularity contest as well.
I don't think, to be honest, like, much is on the line here. As far as just, you know, picking up a win, picking up some money, and just, I guess, moving up the ladder. Because, like, John Lineker shouldn't be, and this is no knock on Rob Font, but he beat Rob Font already. Like, mm-hmm. He, in my opinion, John Lineker is a top bantamweight, and sure, he should be fighting top bantamweights. Not that, and I think Rob Font is a great fighter, and I think this is going to be a really good fight for the fans.
Yeah, but
Rob Font brings it, and his striking so good.
It was supposed to be against Stanton.
Yeah, there was a Cody Stamen.
Stamen, yeah.
And there was here's the other part. Font lasted all three rounds with him. He did mm-hmm. not get. I mean,
that's true.
He couldn't handle the power in terms of winning the fight. He didn't get finished at all. He has very good footwork, yeah, so he's able to stay away.
I mean, Marlon Vera did the same thing against John Lineker. There's a few guys that have been able to go all three rounds with
Chito
Lineker.
Is a brick wall, but yeah.
Chito's tough as nails. But yeah, I think again, and I feel like a lot of fighters don't want to fight Lineker because he's not like the highest ranked opponent, but he's, regardless of whether you win or not, that's a tough fight.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think this is just a fight that was booked. It's exciting. It's fun. We're going to watch it. It should be one of the better fights on the card. But I don't think much is on the line here.
All right.
It wasn't what was originally scheduled, though.
That's true.
You know?
I actually think this might be better.
Yeah.
It's going to be a fun fight.
Anything else on the card you want to shout out? I'm going to go first, if I may, because I usually give it to you guys first. But I'm going to go first today. Deron Wynn taking on Eric Spicely. Deron Wynn, first of all, one of these top prospects out of the wrestling world. He fought Tom Lawler on the Golden Boy MMA show and won handily. And he was supposed to fight Bruno Silva, I believe. So Silva falls out. So they got Eric Spicely, who used to be in the UFC, who had one of the best fights ever. Not one of the best fights ever, but a really good fight with Shoeface. So now he's back. This will be on the prelims. Really looking forward to that. Anything else on this card?
Andrea Lee versus Montana De La Rosa.
Yeah.
I like that fight a lot. I like to see where those two are going and where they're both headed.
Very good.
Yeah, that's my pick.
That's yours as well?
Yeah.
Good for you. Okay, well, the West was on that card here very quickly, if I may. People just hit me up on this. You know what? Forget it. I want to get to this. Let's get to BKFC before we go. BKFC, very quickly, with the time we have remaining. Table, how do we feel about Malignaggi saying, the only reason I got this fight was because MMA fans were stupid enough to think that a less than 500 fighter in the UFC would be good enough to beat, he didn't put it in these words exactly, but a former two-time world boxing champion.
Yeah.
Thank you, in his words, basically, stupid MMA fans for making this possible. How do we feel about that?
I was mad for 5 minutes, and then I realized. I was mad for 5 minutes, and then I realized what he was doing.
What's he doing?
He's basically saying that are you guys serious that you think that this guy can take on a competitive boxer and a two-time world champion? That's what he means. And he took that approach. I don't like the approach that he took because obviously there are some very smart, educated MMA fans. I think the UFC did some type of survey about their particular fans, and they're more athletic than most sports fans, which means because we train in martial arts, we want to watch martial arts.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like it's a messed up statement on his part, but I get what he's saying. He's like, do you guys actually believe that he can outbox a boxer?
Is he right?
Not necessarily, because bare knuckle is not the same as boxing. There's a lot of differences to it, and yeah. it's in a circle too. There's a lot of different things about
and they
how
start
you
start like this, not like this.
Yeah, like yeah. how you cut angles. So he has to make some major adjustments. And honestly, this is my own ignorance. I don't know how in shape Paulie was before this.
We had him in studio again. I don't know how long he looked to be trim.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how quickly you can adjust for the things that you need to do mm-hmm. for bare knuckle. I know that you should definitely start hitting pads and the bag without anything on, so you yeah. strengthen your wrists and your. It's like when you do karate, you had the makiwara and you'd hit it 1,000 times so that you'd built up your hands. So I think there's a lot of those things, the dirty boxing, the clinching. There's a lot of things that he needs to work on that is not something he's used to. You know, you see boxers do things in MMA when they transfer over, they dip their heads too low. It's stuff that's so ingrained in your yeah. body that you default to it. So. Listen, if he gets to out-punch him and stay on the outside and work his jab and his footwork and his movement, and if Lobov is plotting this way, Paulie could have an easy night. But if they get close, I don't know, it could be nasty.
Is he right?
I think he might be. Yeah, and but I think,
prediction
I think
or a proclamation?
I think that's a proclamation.
Well, because if you look at Mayweather McGregor, right? Like that.
I think that,
yeah.
that type of statement applies more for Mayweather McGregor because that was straight boxing. Like mm-hmm. anyone knew, like Floyd was going to piece up McGregor, and it's not that McGregor is not a bad fighter; he's just not a boxer. In this situation, I feel like there's two things: either he might be right, and I'm also a stupid MMA fan, or this is just promotion because, like Phoenix said, I do think there's a case to be made because logic does say that, you know, Paulie should go in there and piece up Artem for sure.
Sure.
But there are enough things that you can add up in Artem's favor that will play against, you know, Paulie. And I think it's very interesting. For example, I mean, okay, so I agreed with his statement until I talked to Brian Campbell. Brian Campbell was the boxing expert, and he does believe that Malinaj is going to have a really tough time in this yeah. bout. And that's when I went, oh, okay. And then I started analyzing all these other factors. Prior to that, I was just like, yeah, Malinaj should just run through Artem. But look, there's clinchings. A lot of clinching involved and striking while you clinch. That's something that we don't see in boxing. And, you know, I know a lot of people hate on Artem in many ways, but like, when he said this, it was pretty on point. He's like, I am no expert at the clinch. I am by no means a great wrestler or, you know, someone that's good at tying up. But against Paulie, I'm an expert because I've been doing this for years. He hasn't. So there's a lot of things, a lot of factors that I think that lead me to believe that this fight might be competitive. But Paulie might be right. We'll wait and see.
I would say just very quickly, whenever you were talking to boxing people about Mayweather McGregor, they were like, yeah, of course Mayweather's yes. going to
exactly.
win.
Yeah, it was an obvious.
On this one, they're like, they're a little bit, yeah, Paulie should win. So my attitude is probably Paulie's going to win, but I don't know. Yeah. I'm
on the same boat.
Trying to remain a little agnostic about it.
I'm not counting out.
Here's what I will say about this, then we'll do under the radar. What I will say about this is very simple. Dude, you can say whatever you want about Lovato and Mousasi being like the best fight or the most important or the most relevant or the most whatever, but it ain't the biggest. It ain't the biggest fight this weekend. The biggest one is Malinaji versus Artem. I guarantee, check all the MMA websites come Sunday morning. See which one's dominating the headlines. Unless Mousasi takes like a wild upset, I suspect it's going to be BKFC. It's going to win the day because that is just... There's just too much sizzle. I'm sorry. There is. There's just too much sizzle. All right. Time now for our last segment. What's one small story that came through that maybe we didn't get to, that maybe we missed, that's just worth a very quick mention? Phoenix, what's under the radar?
The ESPYs. The ESPYs are back and they're here and DC is nominated.
And they added an all MMA category.
Exactly. Yeah. That, which is a big deal. And it's like, how do you pick? Because it's DC, Adesanya, Cejudo, Amanda Nunes, and I think I'm missing somebody. Am I missing somebody?
I forgot.
But that's,
you said Adesanya?
Yeah. So it's hard to pick. So I thought that was really cool.
All right. Very good. What's under the radar, Danny?
Mine often, when we talk about the welterweight division, this man gets, you know, excluded from the conversation of the top welterweight, Santiago Ponzinibbio. Probably the best Argentine MMA fighter we've seen. you know, he was doing well. He was riding a win streak, but, you know, he's had some setbacks as far as, like, out of the cage, and he was hospitalized recently. Our own Guillermo Cruz spoke to him. Mm. He had a knee infection. He was feeling well, but then the medication wasn't working with his body, so he was having fevers. So he had to go back to the hospital, and finally, it seems to be he's in the clear, and he's back home after being hospitalized for, like, I think it was a week. Mm. So he's back, and, you know, not back 100% as far as, like, training wise, but he's back and clear to resume his MMA career.
And all the lights went out in Argentina. Did you see that story?
Yeah.
Kind of crazy. All right. So lastly, I would say I had to do this and be petty because I am petty. UFC announced they're going to have their Hall of Fame ceremony at the Palms. And then right after that, they're going to have some kind of, like, kickoff party or whatever for the weekend. And they're going to have Godsmack play. And I just... I couldn't find a shotgun to put in my mouth fast enough.
Oh, God.
I mean, who is I know who's making these calls. Can you believe that it's 2019? Can you believe it's 2019 and they're having Godsmack concerts? It is the apocalypse. I wait for the earth to just get boiled by the sun. Just end it all, Jesus, because we have lost the plot with this one. What a disappointing piece of news.
I only know, like, two of their songs.
I know one
so
song.
So I can't
though.
Even.
I literally, I don't know. I don't know. And I'm being dead serious about this.
And I like rock and I like metal.
Here's the thing. I don't know what the medical explanation is. And I'm being serious. Every time I hear Godsmack, I instantaneously get diarrhea. Now, what is the connection? I don't know.
I don't know.
But it's like.
It's a lot of information.
Like, it's like, you were crying like a bitch. Uh-oh, where's the Pepto? Uh-oh. About to have an accident. That Godsmack got me again.
It's weird.
I can't go to the concert, obviously. You know, bad things would happen. All right. That it?
There
we go. When are you on the road again?
I leave Thursday. We're going to Madison.
Wisconsin.
LFA 70, I think. Yeah, LFA 70.
Wisconsin. Very underrated U.S. state.
Yeah.
Underrated U.S. state. All right. Well, for Phoenix, for Danny, I am Luke. Hands up, chin down, let him fly. This is MMA Beat.